Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century,
join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
If you're loving this podcast, we invite you to go deeper and partner with us in our work by joining the Gravity Commons, our online community of practice for connecting and learning together.
As a member of the Gravity Commons, you get access to live podcast recordings with upcoming guests, as well as other opportunities to connect and learn together with us in real time,
including learning labs, member meetups, discussion boards, online courses, and our practitioner podcast. Go to gravityleadership.com/commons to find out more. See you in the commons.
Theme music. Applause. I feel like we should have some theme music here. I know we have it later.
What do you mean?
Like just some sort of like I'm just picturing like, you know, a live studio audience and some music, and Ben, you come out in like a really nice suit.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's kind of, you know, like we don't hear the music, you know, this, you know, have you ever listened to our podcast?
No, I don't even know.
You know this music.
Is this a podcast?
You know, we actually have
I thought
music,
we were just hanging out.
We actually have music on the podcast. We put it in post-production, so we don't hear it now, but so you have to sort of imagine yourself, Matt, that it's pretty much like that. Everybody who's listening to this right now has listened to the music, the theme music. They got a little inspired in their hearts. And then it is sort of like we're coming out, like it's an audio medium, so they're not seeing us, Matt.
Okay.
So they can't see that I'm wearing a really snappy suit at 9 a.m. in the morning.
You look really good
on a Friday. Yeah, they can't see that, but I think they feel it. I think they do feel it. So all your dreams are coming true, essentially, is what I'm saying, Matt.
All right.
It's like everything that you just imagine, where you're like, man, I feel like we should have some theme music, is like, well, that we do. We do actually have all those things. So
I'll trust you on this.
Yeah, this.
I have no way to verify any of those things. Listeners,
you could just subscribe to our podcast. Just listen to it occasionally.
All right. Maybe. Maybe. That feels a bit dangerous. Hey, welcome back to the Gravity Podcast. Apparently, we're doing a podcast.
Yep.
And today we've got Rob Dixon, who we did a Gravity Commons Live with. He wrote a book called Together in Ministry, Men and Women in Flourishing Partnerships. Or is it Women and men.
Women and men in flourishing partnerships.
Yeah, all right.
But, you know.
The order's important, I think.
Yeah, he put the women first, so.
And I really enjoyed talking to Rob.
Yeah, I did too. He really knows what he's talking about. Yeah, he's cool. I mean, of course he does. But like, you know, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know. He was just, man, he just had so much information, some good stuff to say. I mean, it's a bit of an academic book because it's like, it's based on research, which, so it's less of like a theological, like, here's what we should be doing, everybody. And a little bit, I mean, it is that a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's also backed up by research about like, why is this hard?
Mm-hmm.
And what have people's experiences been? And that I find really helpful because, you know, our own experience of trying to be men who are empowering women and trying to cultivate an environment where men and women can flourish together.
Yeah.
Like we've run into so many like glass doors that we didn't know were there.
Yeah,
you know, our best intentions don't get us very far.
Nope.
And so we need books like Rob's to help us figure out what we just tripped over, you know, and you know, help us open up the glass doors so we don't bump our noses on them anymore.
Yes. So we could do a whole podcast series on stuff we've learned, things, mistakes we've made, stuff we've learned, even things we're still learning. You know, and I think, Rob has done research and has experience and like the data and the details of just relating in churches, local churches, and consulting with churches, I think is a gift. So
it's great.
Yeah. Do we have anything we want to plug today, Ben? You know what we're doing more and more of?
Podcast?
Eating.
Intros.
I'm eating a lot more than I used to.
Yeah. That might be a problem.
But as it pertains to gravity, we're doing more and more workshops. And I think there's this general like coming out from a virtual hibernation, you know, the pandemic sort of enforced on us, and people want to like get in a room with other people and breathe on each other again.
That's true. I think there's a hunger for being in proximity with one another. So we are doing a lot more of that. We're recording this on Friday. And on Sunday, I'm actually driving all the way up to a retreat center north of Milwaukee because the flights are crazy expensive.
I'm trying to go to Denver, and I can't book a round trip flight for under $800.
Yeah,
what's going on?
It's crazy out there.
Do you think the price of gas is impacting airlines too?
I think it might be
the oil.
I've got some theories on all of this stuff. Anyway, we don't need to get into it, but workshops, I almost went on a tangent.
You got a couple YouTube videos for us to watch, Ben.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You want me to think for myself? Is that what you're telling me?
The real problem about inflation. anyway, we're doing a lot more workshops. I was trying to say that I'm driving up to do a retreat for a church staff. Actually, as this episode drops, I will be finishing up and driving back on Tuesday.
Safe travels home.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ben.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, future Matt. So anyway, but yeah, we are doing a lot more in-person workshops, and I've kind of felt that hunger myself after like bands started touring again.
You are on a tear. You're going to all kinds of
good
concerts.
Bands are coming to Indianapolis. I was just I have to buy tickets to that.
Right? And, You don't even like Kesha, and you're at her front row of her concert.
I just want to be together with people with the bass bumping. That's all I want.
Yeah. Have you put a dollar sign in your name? I'm there, lady. I'm a sucker.
That's a clever little thing that you've done.
Marketing
there.
Ploy.
Anyway.
I don't know if she. So anyway. I don't know if she still does that. I mean,
I don't know if she does either.
She may have some regrets.
Yeah.
We should try to get her on the podcast.
Yeah.
That would be perfect for our market, right?
On Wikipedia, there's no dollar sign in her name. It's just Kesha.
Oh, okay.
So,
So she's
formerly stylized as Kesha with a dollar sign.
Let that be a lesson to everyone. If Kesha can repent, all of us can.
Yeah. And if you put a dollar sign in your name as a little marketing ploy, you can change it back. Yeah. There's not a, you know, I think
it's never too late.
Anyway, if you want to book a workshop with us, I think that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to plug a workshop.
Oh, okay.
You can check out the workshops we do. So it's gravityleadership.com/workshops. And we've got several workshops that we do that are kind of ready to go, right? So Church in the Wild, which is about kind of being the church in the post-Christian West. Mm. We've got an Enneagram workshop, spiritual transformation through the Enneagram. We've got a parenting workshop. And then we're actually developing a new workshop. Seth Richardson is going to be who runs Gravity Congregational Transformation, which is our newly launched service for churches who want to explore the deeper dynamics of what's going on in their church cultures, which is a great service we've done at our church. But Seth is also designing a workshop for churches that want to at least begin to learn what it would be like to ask these kinds of questions. And a lot more as a discipleship workshop we do. Anyway, if that sounds like something you'd like, you can reach out to us. There's a form on that website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also are publishing a book this summer, and we're developing a workshop around that too.
We are. Yep. Yeah. The 8 axioms for cultivating a resilient faith, robust faith. There's a lot. There's a lot of fun stuff coming up. We're going to do a series that's coming up in a little bit about the book. So anyway, watch for that. And if you're not on our book launch team, reach out podcast@gravityleadership.com. Let us know you want to be on the book launch team. Yeah. And we'll make sure that you get the info.
Yes.
When we're ready to begin that process, which I can't remember when. I think it's maybe the end of this month we're supposed to begin that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need to check my timelines and my emails.
Yep. All right. Let's get in and get it on. Get on with it.
Get on with it. Here's Rob, friends. Enjoy this interview. This was great.
We welcome Rob Dixon to the podcast today. Rob is an associate regional ministry director with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA and a senior fellow for gender partnership with the InterVarsity Institute. He adjunct teaches at Fresno Pacific University and Filler Theological Seminary and provides training on flourishing mixed gender ministry partnerships for organizations around the country. That's what we're actually chatting with Rob about today, because he's got a new book out with InterVarsity called Together in Ministry: Women and Men in Flourishing Partnerships. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
Quickly, Rob, why a book about women and men partnered in ministry, and why now for you?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's been a work in progress. So probably you could say 30 years of thinking about this stuff. So my first steps into ministry as a college student were in an environment where I was working with women. I've been mentored by women, supervised by women. I've supervised women as peers in various capacities. And over time, I started to wonder, by God's grace, most of those partnerships were rich and life-giving, wonderful. But I started to wonder over time, is there a way we could up our intentionality here and see those partnerships be even better and be more effective missionally? And so that led me into a study that resulted in the book you've got in your hands, Matt. Another way to think about this is that I think this is a really good time for a book like this, because unfortunately the headlines, and we all know them, are brutal and full of stories of what not to do as women and men work together. And so I'm hoping that Together in Ministry will offer, I like to use the word, a prophetic roadmap. So it's prophetic, it's calling the church to be different, and roadmap means it's got a laid out sequence, things people can do to create a different narrative around women and men working together.
Yeah. Rob, I'm reminded there's a church I worked for many years ago that recently had a situation where the junior high youth pastor was sexually abusing two women in the high school youth group, at least two. And the message that the pastor sent out to the church was framed with, you know, the heart is wicked above all else. Who can understand it? And because our hearts are wicked, I have this bad news to tell you about. And I'm kind of deviating a bit from maybe what we were going to chat about, but I just wonder from your perspective, like, what's insufficient or missing about chalking that up to just, you know, we're all sinful and without Jesus, we'd all be just awful people. So we can't be surprised when something like this happens. But your book actually, I think, tells a different story. How would you shape that differently from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, I think the heart does matter. So, I mean, I think the pastor is correct in that way. I mean, I think there is work to do at a heart level. There's also work to do, though, at a cultural level. So the culture of our communities, I mean, the organizational culture of the faith communities we're a part of. And there's work to do with our hands, like practical things that we do together to build flourishing partnerships. So my model separates into those three categories, the inner life, community culture, and intentional practices. And I think we want to be engaging this at all three of those levels. And it's going to require a ton of intentionality and effort, but I think we can tell a different story. We can live, embrace, and embody is the words I use sometimes. We can embrace and embody a different narrative around this stuff.
Yeah. And I want to get to those three. And then you have 10 attributes that you cluster in those three. But you start, I think, in an important place in your book. You start with the theology of you root it in the Genesis narrative, specifically 1-3, and then you tie it to the ministry, teaching, and embodiment of Jesus. And I think the way that you reframe this is really helpful and also ties into some things we've missed. Could you maybe highlight a few of those important pieces for us as we get started?
Yeah, I'll try. So first of all, I think it's important to realize that the whole of Scripture has something to say about women and men in partnership, women in leadership. So oftentimes that conversation begins and ends often with 1 Timothy 2 or a passage like that. That's an important passage. It needs to be carefully reflected on and worked through. But it's not the only text that speaks to this topic. And I think we do well to examine the whole teaching of Scripture here. And Genesis is a great place to start. So Genesis 1 and 2 tell a story of women and men created without hierarchy. I think mutuality would be the word I'd use to describe the first two chapters of Genesis. So men and women share the image of God. It's not like Adam has more of the image of God, Eve has less. It's just you are both created in God's image. It's a beautiful foundational truth. It's why we care about people, right? Because we're created in God's image. Second, God delegates stewardship of the created world to the first humans. And again, it's not like Adam is given more of a role there. Adam, you take the lead. Eve, you support this. It's actually you together steward the creation, have dominion, right? Together. In Genesis 2, right, there's the passage often that gets interpreted as hierarchy, that where there's the word is helper that gets used in Genesis 2. The problem with that argument of reading hierarchy into that helper language is that every other time, or most every other time that that word is used in the Old Testament, it's used for Yahweh. So Psalm 54 would be a good example where David says, I'm in trouble. Yahweh is my helper, right? There's a way in which that word implies not necessarily subservience, it implies that there's a rescuing that needs to happen. Adam alone was not good. Eve is the helper. Eve comes to the rescue of Adam. And then in Genesis 3, Matt, I like the talking about the curse in the context of Genesis 1 and 2, which is mutuality marks the creation story. Tragically, it also marks the fall, right? So Adam and Eve together fall into sin. I mean, Eve has borne the brunt of the blame for humanity's fall forever, but Adam was standing right there, right? They both fell into sin together, and the curse affects them both as well. And so that's where the power dynamic comes in Genesis 3, that your desire will be for your husband, he will rule over you. And we've been trying to get out from under that since that moment. I think it's important to say that it's not like God's intention changes in Genesis 3. God's intention is clear, mutuality, in Genesis 1 and 2. In Genesis 3, it's the consequence of our rebellion that there will be this power dynamic. And I like to say, I'm sure your listeners would agree, I don't want to be a part of perpetuating any system that has its origins in human sin. Right? So I'm going to do everything I can to overturn that system, to return to God's creation intent. So that's my take on Genesis in what, 5 minutes?
Yeah, that's really good, Rob. I wonder how, I have two questions, I guess. You know, sometimes that passage, I guess you answered this first question that I have. I just want to point out, I guess, then, that sometimes that passage is read as God decreeing out of his, like, here's a good thing that shall be so because I decree it, that he shall rule over you. But it's a different speech act. Right, that you're describing. It's not God decreeing from his heart that this shall be so because it's good. It's God proclaiming what's going to happen as a result of this rebellion. You know, it's God sort of proclaiming tragedy upon humans and saying, oh, like, look what you've done. Now here's what's going to happen. You know, and so I think that's a helpful way of reading it.
Yeah, say, Ben, real quick, I think it's the difference between prescriptive. So prescriptive would be God saying, this is the plan now, but it's more, the difference is descriptive, right? Yes. This is the tragic reality. Yeah. And we see that reality come to pass and we're still dealing with that.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, this is rooted in all of scripture, and Matt mentioned, you know, that Jesus is part of this as well. How would you connect Jesus to sort of this, how does Jesus embody this relational commitment to the vision that you laid out in Genesis, this mutuality in the first two chapters of Genesis?
Well, if folks like their Jesus revolutionary, this is the podcast for them, I think.
Okay. I think we're into that.
Right? Yeah. So the reality is Jesus is incarnated into a world where the curse is in full effect, right? Mm-hmm. Women are less than second-class citizens. I mean, the Old Testament tells some really tragic, brutal stories of women. One commentator calls them texts of terror. So I think maybe the best way I can illustrate this would be the prayer that the rabbis would pray in the morning that went something like, thank you, God, that I'm not born a slave, I'm not born a Gentile, and thank you, God, that I'm not born a woman. That was literally the thing that the pastor or priest of the day would get up and pray. And I think for me, that illustrates the encoded misogyny or patriarchy in the system. And that's the world that Jesus comes into. And so the question then is like, what does Jesus do? How does he engage that system? And this is where I can say he subverts it. He turns it on its head. Walter Wink has written a book and he talks in there about how Jesus engages with women. He says that in every single encounter recorded with Jesus and women in the Gospels, Jesus is doing something to violate the social customs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the social, that he's flipping something around. So I could tell lots of stories and examples, but maybe I'll share one that I like the most, which is John 20, where Jesus comes across Mary in the garden and says, look, I've done it. I'm back from the dead, right? And it's this amazing moment where Jesus tells Mary that he's pulled it off and the most important event of human history has happened. And it's so significant because in that day and age, the rabbis taught that women couldn't give testimony in a court of law. The testimony of a woman was not to be trusted. But it was okay for Jesus to tell Mary this. And in the total of time where Mary goes from the garden to the upper room, she's the only one on the planet that knows the most important message in human history. And she is, I mean, she's rightly been called the apostle to the apostles, right? So Jesus is a game changer for women. And so it's little wonder that Paul, coming along later, looks back at Jesus's life and especially the work on the cross and says, in Jesus, there's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male or female, all are one in Christ Jesus. That's Galatians 3:28, which has salvific implications that God doesn't show favoritism, but it also has these social implications that we are reconciled in Christ in the work of the cross. Mm. So in that sense, one more thought, in that sense, it's like a reset for me, the Genesis paradigm. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting that prayer that you mentioned is directly connected there to those repudiations that Paul names in Galatians. I'd never really thought about that.
Yep.
That is fascinating.
Yep.
So good. Rob, thank you. Just personally, it's just so refreshing to hear you and for this book to be out. It's good. You identify 10 attributes for flourishing mixed gender partners. And you give three domains, right? The inner life, the community culture, and the intentional practices. And really that's the outline for the rest of your book. And I want to get into those, but I wonder if maybe as an introduction, you could just tell us which one of those 10 attributes was most surprising to you, or did you learn in the midst of this research?
Yeah. Well, you're not supposed to do this, Christy. Like when you enter into a qualitative research process, you're not supposed to try to guess what the results are going to be. You want to be a objective researcher, but it was hard. It would be hard for me to imagine a model for partnership that doesn't include communication or theological alignment or talking about boundaries. So those things I would have guessed on the front end. The ones that were surprising to me were like learner's posture. I mean, in hindsight, you go, well, of course. But in the moment, I thought, oh, wow, a lot of people are talking about empathy and walking in another person's shoes and asking good questions and listening. So learner's posture. Or another one was public affirmation and modeling, which is that when communities take a public stand, when they proclaim their value publicly, when there's representation, modeling, that people feel permission to have to enter into partnerships in their context, right? So that was another one that kind of caught my attention. So it was a joyful journey, I can just tell you, to sift all of this data and try to mine and find the 10 attributes that emerged. But those are a couple that were surprises to me.
That's good. Thank you.
Mm. Maybe we can then jump into just explore briefly, Rob, one attribute in each of these categories. Part one is about the inner life, which is comprised of the attributes of authentic learner posture, shared theological conviction of gender equality, and awareness of gender brokenness. That phrase actually piqued my interest when I heard it. Awareness of gender brokenness. What do you mean by that?
Well, I started to hear stories in the research of people talking about struggles, internal struggles that they had, that related to their experience as a gendered person. So being a man or a woman, and then their engagement with someone of the opposite gender. And so, for example, you'd hear men talk about lust or pornography, or they'd talk about objectifying women. Women would talk about some of those same things, but also what it meant to be marginalized and recovering from that and objectification. Both men and women would tell me stories about overcoming bias and how they view the opposite gender. And so I sort of gathered all of that up and put it in a bucket and called it gender brokenness. It's just ways that we are struggling internally that relate to our experience around gender. And the key, Matt, is are you aware? The key is awareness. So are you aware of what's happening internally for you? And when you're aware, then you're more able to A, mitigate and move towards wholeness, but B, you're more able and more likely to have a healthy, safe, flourishing partnership with someone of the opposite gender.
Yes. And I do want to get into this later a bit. I think you have a healthy, corrective take on sort of what's come to be known as the Billy Graham rules about how men and women are to relate to each other. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if you came upon the phenomenon I encounter a lot, which is, there's the kind of the normal human shame or normal human temptations that I think you don't have to be a Christian to carry, mm-hmm. right? And that involves your body, it involves your sexual history, it involves your confidence or esteem, all this. But there, increasingly for me in ministry, have been stories about people dealing with maybe the baggage. I don't know if brokenness is the right word, but the baggage of how the church has attempted to help them in their brokenness. Right. So one of the most famous sort of epitomes of this would be the guy who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye, kind of, pulled the book off the market, recanted of everything he taught, and now isn't a practicing Christian. And a lot of people in my generation, Rob, I'm not sure about yours, were sort of mentored sexually in that kind of way of thinking. Maybe we could call it like Christian purity culture. Mm-hmm. What did your research find out about that? And what benefit does being aware of that? How does that translate into a more healthy, flourishing ministry partnership?
Yeah, good question. And people want from the research, people want real talk is maybe the governing phrase I'd use. They want to talk about stuff that matters. They want safe spaces to talk about that. I think there's some barriers to that. So internally, people, it's hard to go there. It's hard to be honest. It's hard to be vulnerable. It's hard to do that inner work. We're too busy. There's other things we'd rather do. Ron Rollheiser has a great quote about, like, we have good intentions, but we're just too busy. So I think there's internal barriers, but then there's also maybe what I call external barriers. I think, what is the church doing? What are our faith communities doing to create safe space for real talk? And listeners may have a different experience of this, but my concern, and if I was to poke a bit, I would say, what are we doing with our discipleship around sexuality, around gender brokenness? I see lots of flyers in churches when I go visit for men's ministry, women's ministry. The men's ministry usually has like archery and bacon and maybe some mud wrestling, things like that. All of that could be fine. But I guess the question I would ask is, are we also making space in those gatherings for honest assessment of what's happening for ourselves, for repentance, for prayer ministry, for accountability, for support? Are we going deep with one another so that we are more able to effectively engage with the opposite gender? I mean, I think it's fine to work on our own discipleship, but it has like an end. There's a greater end than just me being whole. That's important, but it's, can I engage with others in a way that's healthy and safe and life-giving, and that avoids so many of the stories that we see in the news, right? So I'd poke a little bit at kind of what are our structures for disciple making in our churches.
Hi, I'm Deb from Ormond Beach, Florida. One of the best gifts that I received for my journey through a Gravity Leadership cohort was a new perspective on flourishing in life and in ministry. I didn't realize how much of my discipleship was formed by call-out culture. My whole orientation was toward calling out what was wrong or sinful in the world, in my own life, and in the church. But Gravity helped me see that Christ was always calling people in toward life and flourishing. And my cohort came to feel kind of like a community garden. We got to practice calling each other in to a deeper awareness of God's life, of His goodness and His love, and how it was bearing fruit in our lives. So if you're looking for a safe space to grow in your life with God and to practice your gardening skills in the life of others, I hope you'll check out the Gravity Leadership Academy.
To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
You know, one of the things that we do at Gravity is we lead these leadership discipleship cohorts. And every single one we've led, except for one, has been mixed gender. And Christy leads cohorts for us, and she leads men and women in these discipleship processes. And it's much more than facilitating conversation. So Christy's actually bearing some authority with men. And I've had to learn how to do that increasingly with women. And my experience is it's extremely redemptive.
Yeah.
I don't know, Christy, what are your thoughts about what Rob's saying in terms of what we do at Gravity and how you've experienced that?
Yeah, well, I just finished a cohort, after a year, and in our very last one, it was interesting to hear the men talk about how they had not really sat under a woman. Mm-hmm. And had not been discipled, that had not been part of their practice, and how that formed them in the what we actually are teaching, but the practice of being under woman was part of it. And I think it's actually shaping for me too. There have been a lot of environments that I've been in where I've had to prove or earn or, let me show you all my documentation that I'm qualified to do this, right? Mm-hmm. And to be in an environment where that's accepted and welcomed and invited, and then to see the transformation of people is so beautiful. And it really is a privilege.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think that's some of the gift, of being able to work through these things. you know, with just how much of a gift for me as a man, like what have I lost out on not being in a culture where it was normative for a woman to invest in me or, you know, that kind of a thing, I think is yes, I think a beautiful result of this.
Yeah, let me just say real quick, Ben, I think the stories I told were examples around like the mixed, like the breakout, gender breakouts, but I love the model that you're talking about. If churches could get there, that would be a great goal, I think, to shoot for. Yeah. There's probably some steps that need to happen in most churches that I know of to get to that point where you could have those conversations, but that would be a dream.
Yeah.
It'd be a great vision.
Well, maybe that's a good segue into talking about maybe this next question, but part two of the book is about community culture. And so you talk about things like vision for freely shared power, differences for the sake of mission, the value of holistic friendships, and then corporate sensitivity to adverse gender dynamics. And a lot of those issues seem to me to hinge on our ability to see how power works, and ways that power kind of flows and moves between people and within organizations. I wonder if you could tell us, just from your experience and research, like what are some ways we need to learn how to see how power works in order to foster these mutual relationships between men and women?
Well, I love when people ask me about power. I think, and I'll just be blunt about it, we need to talk more about power than we do. Mm-hmm. Every faith community, I think, could use more discussion about power. Yes. I think, so a couple things. One is, I think we, in Christian organizations, sometimes we think that there's no power dynamics in this group. We're fine.
Right.
The truth is, power dynamics are operating in every organization I've ever come across, Christian or otherwise. Mm-hmm. Second, I think sometimes we think wrongly that if we talk about power, it's going to make it worse or it's going to unleash the beast or whatever. The truth is, I think sometimes power thrives in silence. And so, so talking about it I think there's probably exceptions to this, but talking about it is going to be useful for communities. So two thoughts on how to do that. One is, I'll ask the question for faith communities out there, what's your philosophy or your theology of power? Do you have one? And if not, I think you should talk about it until you make one, you find one.
Great question.
Yeah. So at one point I was asking a friend to be on our leadership team. And she, on paper, it looked great. She had the right skills, calling, giftings, relational connections, all of that. But as we got into the process, she was reticent to join the team. And what came out was that she had spent her whole life on the outskirts of power. She'd been marginalized because of her socioeconomic status and on, gender, ethnicity. And so the thought of joining the team that held power was really challenging for her. She'd only viewed power in a way that it oppresses people. Mm-hmm. And so what she did, to her credit, was she spent months looking at the Gospels only through the lens of power. How does Jesus steward power? And it flipped. I didn't answer all of her questions, but it gave her enough of a view that power can be used in a way that helps people, that's a blessing to others, that redeems things, that she joined our team, had a fruitful ministry, and went on. So I would use her example to say, I think we need to talk more about power and we need to theologize about power and look at the text, the scriptures in that way. Second thing I'll talk about is audits. So power audits, I talk about this in the book. But can we make space to ask the question, who has power in our community? Why did those people have power? Is how power is distributed in our community the way we want it to be? And if not, what can we do to redistribute power? Those are really generative conversations, life-giving conversations. Mm. At one point, I led my team into a chat like that, and we went around the room and we said, who has power? And what was immediately clear was that I had by far the most power on the team. I'm tall, I'm white, I'm male, I had the title, I had the leadership experience, I mean, on and on and on. And there are other people on my team who had far less power. They took up way less space in our community. And so the question then for our team was, okay, in light of how power is distributed, do we want to rethink things? And what we landed on was, yes, Rob needs to take up less space, a good thing for everyone. And others on the team need to take up more space. And so one way to do that was for me to be more proactive with my agendas and to delegate to others, right? And so it required me to be more on my game. But then I could get to the point where I could say, hey, would you lead this session? How can I help you get ready to lead that? And it was beautiful for the people on the team. But to be honest, it was wonderful for me too. It just meant less that I had to carry. It meant that I got to learn from others. I mean, it was life-giving all the way around. So those two things, I think theologizing about power, talking about that, and second, doing an honest audit of how power works in a community.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Rob. I think your attitude towards it is helpful to hear about, because I do think one of the fears that as I listen to leaders, I think one of the fears about doing a power audit is that there is something about like having a lot of power that I think there's like this latent shame, like I shouldn't do this, or I did something wrong, or this is my fault, or you know what I mean? And just to have it named feels really threatening, I think, to a lot of leaders. Right. And so your example, I think, is really helpful to just know that you were the person taking up all the space in the room, and the ways that you had to work actually to give away your power, maybe in ways that, you know, learning new skills like delegation and, you know, making sure you're not coming up with the meeting agenda 3 minutes before the meeting and you know, all of those kinds of things that are really subtle, but interestingly, like ways of actually holding on to power, you know, not because you want to, but just it's sort of like just by default, you end up holding on to power unless we can talk about it like you're talking about.
I mean, Ben, one through line for me with all the attributes is that the conversations about this stuff, whether we're talking about gender brokenness or power, those conversations are going to be awkward until they're not. Right. So I think people need to push through the awkwardness and get to the point where those conversations are normalized. I mean, on our team at one point, I realized it's normal for us to talk about power. Mm-hmm. It's not awkward anymore. But the only way to get there is to push through and have the conversations.
Yeah.
Yep. Can I give an awkward story?
Please.
Yeah. So I recently finished up a cohort where I had a couple women and about five men, and they were all in professional vocational ministry positions. And I debriefed with everybody after the cohort just to check in with them. How'd it go? Give me feedback. What are next steps with you, et cetera. Well, one of the women who was a pastor, a senior pastor at a church, has for 10 years, Rob, listen to this, 10 years, she's been a senior leader in a church. And her leader, whether it was a superintendent or a district manager, district regional manager, or a bishop, et cetera, they've all been women. So she's been in sort of women hierarchies for over a decade. And that's been her primary leadership spaces. So she comes to me and she says, or in our phone call, she goes, you know, for 3 months, this cohort was weirdly triggering for me. And I couldn't put my finger on why. And she said, and then it dawned on me, like in the middle of our cohort, this is the first time I've been in a space where a woman wasn't at the center of it in over 10 years.
Wow.
And she said, the way that you shape the space as a man was really hard for me at the beginning. Now, Rob, I've cared about this for 25 years. I feel like I've done tons of work. I've tried to be hyper aware. We've had a lot of women come through our thing. Ben and I have pastored a church for 7 years now, women preach. Like in my weaker moments, I like to pat myself on the back that like, we're actually making a dent here. Yeah. And my friend Kara was just like, you know what? This was the subtext. You don't really know the first thing about how your gender takes up space in a group of people. Mm-hmm. But I am so grateful she said that to me.
Yeah.
So grateful. And I think if we don't have women in our life who can say that to us, not all of us have women leaders who've been in women-shaped spaces for a decade, but women who can actually tell us uncomfortable, awkward truths and not risk losing their job. Mm-hmm. It's a gift, right?
Yep, for sure. Yep, learning opportunity, right? Matt, the book that's been formational for me on this topic that we're talking about is a book called Making Room for Leadership by Mary Kate Morse. Hmm. So Making Room for Leadership by Mary Kate Morse. And then her genius is she uses space as a metaphor for power. And what she does is she says, how much space you take up is an amalgamation of a lot of factors. So gender, race, ethnicity, I mean, all through the list.
Age, and, wealth. Yeah,
yeah. Totally, all of that. And it gives you a chance to quantify and language to quantify how much power someone takes up. And so then you can have the conversations about redistribution and such. But Mary Kate Morse, Making Room for Leadership.
That's really good. I think a lot of time too, as a younger pastor, I was at a co-pastoring team of men. And I thought the goal was like a flat, no hierarchy. Everybody has the same power. But what I learned through some really also uncomfortable, awkward situations, Rob, were people telling me, if you don't own the authority you have as a pastor, it ends up doing really weird work around here. Mm-hmm. Because you do have some authority, you do have some power. And if you pretend like you don't, it doesn't go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, right? Have you experienced that before too? Like,
yeah,
the ways that power kind of works sideways if we don't actually own what we have.
Yeah. I think you do have to own that. And I think that's a good word. I also think we probably have more room to give away power than we think we do. So I've said this half jokingly in the past, but my goal every year is to give away as much power as I can without losing my job. Right. Well, I mean, what I mean by that is I'm going to execute the job that I've been assigned to do with by InterVarsity. I want to be forthright about that. I want to lead with integrity and authenticity, all that. And I want to give away as much power as I can within the parameters of my job description. So I think there's a bit of a sweet spot there, Matt, where you're exercising appropriate authority and empowering as freely as you can.
So I think that actually, that's actually giving me better language for what I was trying to say, Rob. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by is you can't give away power unless you own that you have it.
Sure. Yeah.
If you pretend like everybody has the same power, then you're basically just like, well, why don't you do something then? Yeah. Here's room. Here's freedom. Do whatever you want. Yeah. Rather than what I think you're naming is, this is God's plan. This is Jesus's plan. I mean, when he's about ready to send to the Father and there's people doubting him and worshiping him, he's like, all right, you who doubt, you who worship, you all get as much power as you can possibly handle. Mm-hmm. And what we say around here is that's God's plan to give us as much power as we can possibly handle, because that's actually what new creation is. Mm-hmm. Us stepping into greater authority and greater agency in the cosmos. That's what we're going to do. And so, I think we're saying the same thing, Rob.
Uh-huh.
I have misstepped, especially with women, when I think that all they need is opportunity. Mm-hmm. All they need is what I need. Mm-hmm. And actually they need something different because of all these cultural and all these barriers and all this baggage and all this brokenness and all these experiences in the church. And so if I don't own the fact I have work to do here in order to come underneath this sister and help her step into the authority of the kingdom, if I just sort of get out of the way, then I've made some missteps there. I guess that's maybe more of what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah. Amen.
Well, man, I could talk about this power stuff all day because I think it's so important, dude. But let's move on to part three.
Okay.
Which are, we've talked about the internal self. We've talked about the community culture. Part three deals with these practices. And you mentioned one earlier, abundant communication, but others, contextualized boundaries, public affirmation, and modeling. Let's talk about boundaries, right? Because the most famous example of boundary setting in white evangelicalism is the Billy Graham rules. Mm-hmm. And I guess I could set this up with a long preamble, but let me just ask, what does your research say about that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, people, if you get a copy of my book, read the foreword, because Ruth Haley Barton tells a story about her experience with the Billy Graham rule that I think is profound. It needs to be heard. So a couple things about the Billy Graham rule. Number one, this is from the 1940s, I think, the late 40s. Billy Graham and his leadership team got together and they said, what rules do we want to define our ministry together? And they came up with several, actually. So the initial draft of the Billy Graham rule was really rules. So there was one about financial propriety, integrity. There was one about not inflating numbers, which I think would be a good rule to adopt again. But then there was this other rule that's become, sometimes I jokingly call it the 11th commandment, which is that Billy Graham was never going to be alone with a woman that wasn't his wife. And the idea was, if you could systematically keep Billy Graham from being in a room with someone, then he's not going to fall into sin himself. And there's not going to be this like sort of outside what's going on there, sense of that. So, and it's become enshrined over the years. My research showed a couple of things about the Billy Graham rule. Number one, it hasn't fully solved the problem that it's intended to solve. And the tragic stories we read about, we've been talking about on the podcast here, tell that story, right? That the Billy Graham rule hasn't fully put out the fire, so to speak. It hasn't solved the problem. And so might be time to try something different. The second thing that came out in the research about the Billy Graham rule was that it has had these unintended negative consequences that affect both women and men, but I think primarily marginalized women. So I'll give you a couple of examples. Number one, there's the story I was talking with a woman. She was telling me about a male she's just started supervising. And she looks at me through the camera and says, look, if I can't be alone in a space with him, I just can't do my job, right? I mean, just at that basic level, she can't execute the job description she's been given if she can't be in the same physical space as this guy she's working with, right? That's one negative consequence. Another one would be that it perpetuates the narrative that women and men can't control each other, that something crazy is going to happen if you drive two blocks to the coffee shop in a car together. To me, the unhelpful part of that is it shortchanges what we talked about earlier about discipleship. The reality is a rule is not going to save us. What's going to save us is that hard, deep discipleship work, right? And so that's the work we need to be doing. And so the Billy Graham rule sort of perpetuates that narrative that we can't contain ourselves. Then the third negative consequence or unintended consequence that emerged was that women are denied access and agency. So I did an interview with someone and she told me a story about driving to a conference with a guy who has the same job she has. And he's an ardent Billy Graham rule follower. And so they couldn't drive together. And what she said to me was, number one, it made her feel like a threat to him. Like that wasn't a very fulfilling experience. But then number two, what she said is, when we drive home from the conference is when we decide what we're going to do with the conference content, how we're going to apply what we heard. And she said, I wasn't allowed to be in the car for that conversation, right? It literally cut short her agency. And so the question then in the research was, if not the Billy Graham rule, then what? And what people came up with was this idea of contextualized boundaries. So we asked the question, who are you? And that gets to all of the inner life stuff we've talked about. Who are you? Where are you at on your journey? What's the community culture in which you're situated? And what makes sense for each individual partner? And you have that conversation. Again, it will be awkward. You push through that. You have that conversation. What I like to do with my team is I give them scripted questions. Why don't you just ask each other these questions, right? And that will help you get to that conversation. And then you have decisions about boundaries that you've made in your partnership, and then you share those and move forward with accountability. So that's what I would recommend. Rather than the supreme restrictive boundary of the Billy Graham rule, we ask the question, what makes sense for us?
Yeah. So I hear you saying, like use wisdom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And talk about it.
That's a much shorter way to summarize what I just said, Matt. Thank you for that.
I mean,
oh, very helpful.
So like, yeah. You know, but Rob, I say it like that. I say it sort of in a cheeky way to say like, oh yeah, this isn't new.
Yeah.
Like the thing you're saying isn't radical. It's not dangerous. It's actually what scripture tells us to do.
Yeah.
To walk in relationships in love with wisdom, rather than, like you said, making this one size fits all thing that, and you named so many of the maybe weaknesses or insufficiencies of this rule. The one I want to ping off of just real quick is what I've heard the most is the last two things you said, that the Billy Graham rule keeps me from the room where it happens. Mm-hmm. Any kind of authority or power I have is distributed, derivative, like, go do this, what we decided. Mm-hmm. And two, it fundamentally organizes our bodies to relate to each other in we have to stay away from something. Yeah. And you become, meaning the woman becomes the threat to the thing that could ruin me.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's, yeah. That's not, that's bad. That's not Genesis 1-3. That's not Jesus. That's
right.
You won't get that anywhere in the kind of stuff that you begin your book in, the theology, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and yet, yeah, and the problem, of course, is we've been living with that, what you just described, Matt, for 70 years. I mean, it's 70 years of Billy Graham rule attempts anyway at practice in the church. And so it's going to require some new learning. It's an adaptive challenge, right? To say, how can we reimagine how we operate with regard to boundaries? I think contextualized boundaries is the way to go, but it's going to take work and intentionality, some courage too.
Well, Ben, Christy, any final questions or thoughts for Rob before we jump into the commons part of this conversation?
Yeah, Rob, I'm curious because all that I've heard is so good and so needed and not practiced in every place. So what do you say to the listener who says, yes, I agree and I want that and I'm not in that type of environment?
Yeah. Great question, Christy. I think a couple of things. So one would be find allies that think like you do. I think there's strength in numbers. And so you want to find people that have a similar bent that say, we can do this differently. Let's reimagine how we operate as women and men. So that's one thing. The second thing I like to say is start small. You know, I think often there's this impulse, I have it too. Let's change the whole church tomorrow. You know, like, I mean, I'd love to do it. If I had a magic wand, we're done. We're on our way. But I can't, right? So, but what can I do? What's the next faithful step for me given the in the context where God's put me? And I think you're looking for open doors, like a sweet spot where you can affect change and start to get the ball rolling that hopefully becomes a snowball with momentum, right? Moving down the hill. So those would be two encouragements. Find peers, find allies. And then second, start small.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Christy, I just want to name, I know this is hard for women to do.
Yeah.
I mean, how many churches that are run by women where women feel like they have an ally and advocate to do what you just said, Christy and Rob?
Yeah.
Maybe 2%, 1% of white evangelical churches. And the vast majority are guys who hold the keys. And, you know, a woman gets hired as a youth minister, maybe a music minister, kids director, maybe like an associate pastor. Mm-hmm. And then you have to navigate these complex realities of your boss, maybe not having even half of these 10 attributes.
Yeah.
And you have to lead from below or manage from below. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I just want to acknowledge that is awful.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. And I think it's important. I mean, we just don't notice it. Right. People are unaware. I was recently in a meeting with three men who were basically bosses, right? And they were asking me some questions that were hard to answer. And I realized even at the beginning of the meeting, I just said, hey, can I just acknowledge the fact that I'm the only woman in this room and that you all three are my bosses? And this is difficult for me. And right away, my big boss was like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about it, right? I don't think that was his heart. It wasn't like he was trying to put me in this awkward situation, but he just didn't even notice, right? And it just takes time and practice, and we have to be intentional to even be aware of the power dynamics that are at play.
Yep. Man, I'm glad you said that, Christy. Maybe one quick thought to Matt. I think there's a chapter in my book, I'm borrowing from research that a dear friend, colleague has put together where she's identified 27 examples of what you just said, Christy, power dynamics that marginalize women in the workplace. And I think a great place to start would be just, can we read this article together, this chapter together? And like, because I think it does start with awareness. So I appreciate you naming that.
Yes. Yeah.
Rob, thanks for being with us today during this public part of our podcast. As we close this public part, I mentioned that you offer training for organizations on flourishing ministry partnerships. Where can people go to learn more about that?
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. So they can catch me online. So I have let me just set the bar for people, an ever in process website. Like, okay, lower your bar on that. Mm-hmm. It's me working on it in my free time, but it's drrobdixon.com. So drrobdixon.com. And there's a way to reach me off of that. I love to do consulting, coaching, training. I tell my staff, sometimes my InterVarsity staff, that if you want me to read your email, make sure gender is in the title somewhere. And then they started to take advantage of that. It would be like the subject line would say, like, help me with this question about 1 Timothy 2. And then the body of the email would be like an expense question. So we had to do away with that. But these are the emails I want to be reading. These are the conversations I want to be a part of. So feel free to reach out.
All right.
Thank you.
That's awesome. The book again is titled Together in Ministry, Women and Men in Flourishing Partnerships. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you just listened to the sultry tones of Rob Dixon, Dr. Rob Dixon. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic.
Right. It was.
Yeah, it was great.
We enjoyed about another 20 minutes in our Commons live discussion where something incredible happened. One of our commoners.
Is that, I don't know. Commoners.
Interesting. Citizens of the Common. Common. Yeah. One of our commembers.
Friends. What are our friends?
Yeah, one of our friends, just remarked about the way Christy, Ben, and I interact on the podcast. And named like a kairos he had about it. And then we spent like 15 minutes debriefing using some of Rob's attributes and the arenas or domains in which those attributes work, and teased out, I think, a lot of the micro particular kinds of conversations that need to happen if we're going to see Rob's vision for mutual flourishing in ministry happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fascinating. It was almost like we got Rob as like an unpaid consultant.
He consulted for us for Gravity Leadership. Thank you, Rob.
If you're thinking about hiring him as a consultant, he did.
So
say
go
he likes to
drrobdixon.biz and find.
.com.
Oh, he should have .biz because this is his business.
I think would be a very good consultant. So if you do want to hire him, but yeah, it was fascinating. Yeah. I think because we were able to explore like all the different. I was reminded at the end there where we talked about the insufficiency of the Billy Graham rule to like actually do the work of, bringing flourishing and mutuality. And I was just reminded about like, there's insufficiency in every rule. There's insufficiency in every sort of cut and dried, cookie cutter, prepackaged way that we try to do something about this. Right. And so, the comment had to do with like, how much Matt and I talk on this podcast versus how much Christy talks, right? And we just got to tease out like what all the complicated factors are that go into that, in terms of it's not just about gender, but gender is a big part of it. And just the insufficiency of just saying, oh, well, if Christy just talks more, that solves it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Is that good for Christy? Or does Christy want to talk more? Like all of these factors, I think that were, it's just really fascinating to talk through.
But it's like really made that conversation good is you two are so humble and open and teachable. And that takes intentionality on your part. To be taught to learn from Rob as he like consulted us and kind of helped us work through that and untangled some stuff. And so thank you for that because it's really a gift. And I think it was a gift to the people in the comments who watched it happen.
Yeah. But I'll just say for my part, that came through like decades of failure, thinking that I could figure out who I needed to be without learning and input and trying to be a Christian without repentance is really hard.
Yeah, trying to get it all right. Sort of like go away in your own mind and figure out how to empower women.
Yeah.
Something a little bit. Yeah.
I remember when I woke up to like how ridiculous that is. And I was like, okay, so if I can be wrong, then really there's nothing I can't learn.
Right.
And if I can be wrong, it's actually in owning that I'm wrong, I become the kind of person who other people want to be around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That shift in posture, I think, too, is just, it's one of the fundamental ways that we learn to become a person who can actually be empowering Because again, if we think that as men, you know, for example, for me to empower women, it just means that I like that I can figure this all out sort of on my own. Like I'm just perpetuating the problem. That's part of the issue with patriarchy, right? Is just that, well, I need to be in charge and I need to know everything and I need to have a perfect plan and I can never be wrong and it has to go right. And so I think just in the willingness to be wrong and to make mistakes and just own them quickly and apologize and make restitution. Yeah. I think that's a good beginning, you know, for men, if you want to learn how to empower women. So,
or for people to empower people.
That's right? True too.
I mean,
yeah. If you're a pastor or just a human, that might be a good place to start as well.
We commend all humans. learn to be wrong.
How many listeners are non-human?
Well, my dog loves this.
That's not for me to. That's not for me to determine. You can sign your own Guinness. Is that what it is? Order.
I've always pronounced it genus.
Genus.
Guinness is the beer. In my mind.
Oh,
that's something different.
Yeah. That's. You can assign your own Guinness if you'd like. I guess. So I don't know what that would be.
Guinness. That reminds me. Did you guys hear about that scientists invented a new kind of air freshener?
No.
No.
Yeah. It's mind controlled.
Mind controlled air freshener?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It makes sense if you think about it.
Matt.
Did you see that one coming, Christy?
I was like, what is going on? Oh, friends. People are going to stop listening to the podcast right at the end for this little.
I'm sure that already happens. I'm sure they just forward right through.
Or they're going to skip ahead to it.
Right.
There are severals of people listening who try these jokes out on their 14-year-old daughter, you know? Dads that are like,
dad jokes.
Maybe on their first date.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and they tell the date this joke, and they give him a little punch in the arm with that look, that knowing look.
Yep,
that's how I like to think.
There
about
are dozens
it.
Of us.
Yeah. All right, we'll see you next time, everybody.
Peace, everybody.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
You can join our Gravity community for free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles that we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sturkey and Matt Tebby. Aaron Sturkey edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his work at aaronsturkey.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.